The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. And it is time for some big stories. The Big Lead, starting with number one.
The Big Lead, Bizarro World.
How many times can Sound Transit rip us off and yet maintain the support of the public and public officials? It's aggravating. The latest headline from the SeattleTimes.com is Sound Transit to spend $56,000. And I know what you're thinking. $56,000? That's a bargain when it comes to Sound Transit. Sure. Sure. They have parties that are vastly more expensive than that. I know. But wait until you hear what it's for. $56,000 in order to design the demolition of an abandoned trolley platform. Not to demolish it, but just to design the demolition of it. My 2-year-old could start the demolition project of this. Give her a hammer. She calls a bang bang. She'd just be all over this thing. Designing, it's a basically a concrete structure with a nice little rooftop, and basically vagrants use that to hang out under and harass passerbyers. So now it's going to cost $56,000. I'm surprised, actually, given the fact that vagrants are already utilizing this as a shelter. They don't just ask the city of Seattle to pay them and call it a housing shelter for various drug abusers. But instead, they're going to take it down. $56,000 on the abandoned trolley, and I'm not the only one upset about it. There are others. This is the abandoned trolley stop at 5th Avenue South and South Jackson Street. It's next to an office building where transit staff work. But they're still going to spend the $56,000 to survey and engineer the demolition. I'm looking at this thing wondering, if you just gave me the $56,000 and a jackhammer, tell you what, I'll just rent the jackhammer from Home Depot. You know, we could get this thing done. And I'm not the only one who thinks that. Martin Selig, who owns the nearby office building and is a new hero of mine, just based on what he's saying here, Martin Selig says his staff was told 2 years ago the platform would be removed. A month ago, his company started calling Sound Transit, asking for them to take action. And he says, just take the damn thing down. What have you got to survey it for? He says, removal would be easy, and his company has offered to do so. Quote, I would be happy to foot the bill to get rid of it. I'll have my guys do it, no questions asked. Unquote. Now, Sound Transit claims that they have to have engineering studies to explore how to maintain drainage and whether demolition would harm any utilities immediately below the trolley stop. The cost and the timeline for the actual demolition have not been set yet. You take a look at this thing. This is a concrete and metal rooftop here on the sidewalk. I take it that if you just demolished what's at the station itself, there's not electricity through it. You know, this doesn't seem to be all that complex to me. Give this Martin guy $56,000 to study the issue, quote unquote, study the issue with his team, and they'll have this thing knocked out, for crying out loud. And yet, we've entrusted the officials of Sound Transit, led by the way, a guy who gets $500, has a $500 an hour coach to teach him how not to be obnoxious to his employees, specifically female employees, $500 an hour coach there. We've got Sound Transit entrusted with basically the future of Washington State travel and transportation, $54 billion and counting because of the amount of the opportunity cost involved and what Sound Transit's involved in with. So they can't figure out how to demolish an abandoned trolley platform that the office people that work next to them can figure out how to do and would do for free. But they're going to spend $56,000 just studying the problem. Just studying the problem. $56,000. Now, it's cheaper than the million-dollar toilets that ended up selling for what? They sold for $6,000, if memory serves me right. When the city of Seattle finally got rid of their million-dollar self-cleaning toilets that ended up being prostitution brothels, they sold them for $6,000 apiece. This $56,000 demolition is going to occur in part because office workers have enjoyed vagrants sitting under the rooftop of the trolley and harassing people, according to locals in the area. It's just been years of very offensive, harassing behavior, says one witness. Sometimes groups of men sit on the platform, drink alcohol, and harass women, she said. So, again, this speaks ill of a number of things. It speaks ill of Sound Transit being unable to figure out how to demolish a very simple structure without spending $56,000 and looking at it. It speaks ill of the city of Seattle that you can allow this transit structure to be utilized to harass passerbyers for so long that everybody knows about it and yet nothing's done about it. You know, isn't the number one job of government to protect its citizens? Do you think women are feeling safe if they're harassed regularly by vagrants in that structure that sits 2 feet above the rest of the sidewalk? I don't think so. So $56,000. I know a number of construction companies that I'm betting could get rid of this thing. If, you know, you could probably give them $40,000 and get rid of it that way. And speaking of homeless encampments and other things, that brings us to story two.
The Big Lead, Big Local.
Shock. Shock is how Cher is describing their feelings that the Licton Springs permit is expiring to get rid of. What's so funny? What's being laughed about in there? The Springs homeless encampment, the tiny homes encampment in North Seattle, is going to close. And it is the Share Wheel activists are shocked that the city is finally closing this thing down. I'm shocked, too. I'm just shocked that it's taken them this long. You know, remember, it wasn't long ago the Times ran the story about how much crime had increased in the vicinity immediately surrounding this area. What was it, like 120%? I mean, how much more evidence do you need that this particular homeless encampment's a bad hombre, bad thing to have around your neighborhood, bad for the community, bad for the city, bad for the people that live there? Why? Because you're enabling them to live lives that degrade their own dignity. You're enabling them to continue to abuse substances that lead to early death and disease and spread that disease to others. It leads to family dysfunction. All of those things. And the city's finally getting rid of it. So the shock for me, that for Cher, it's, oh my gosh, Seattle's drawn a line. And I also am shocked that, oh my gosh, Seattle's drawn a line. But I'm pleasantly shocked that they're finally calling it good. The city will pay the Low Income Housing Institute, an affordable housing nonprofit, combined $1.75 million this year to operate six of the city's villages, including Licton Springs, with Cher Wheel and its sister nonprofit, Nicholsville, as partners for the on-the-ground staff. The city's decision underscored tensions in the relationship between Cher and the Low-Income Housing Institute, with the former accusing the Low-Income Housing Institute of neglecting to provide resources like sufficient case management. But the executive director, Sharon Lee, said some Licton Springs residents turned down housing, which she partially attributed to her belief that Cher Wheel did not support the city's efforts to move villagers into permanent homes. And by the way, that makes perfect sense to me. You know, I have personally spoken to people who have denied going to places that are safe and healthy because they are too wrapped up in their own addictions and that they want to continue those addictions. It is a tragic and sad and painful thing. But when this Low-Income Housing Institute is saying, hey, some of these people do not want that assistance, well, they're not going to want it so long as the city enables them, the community enables them. And I'm talking to you, too, not just blaming the city of Seattle. Anybody out there who pulls over on the side of the road and hands over their cash to alleviate their own guilt when they see somebody begging on a freeway off-ramp, you're part of the problem, too. You might as well just say, hey, look, would you take a needle that's laced with hepatitis and stick it in your arm for me, you know, so I can feel better about myself? So I understand the desire, the want to help people. That's a healthy thing, and that's great. But do it the smart way. Don't just give in to the heartstrings as you're pulling up to the off-ramp. Make sure you give to a place like Union Gospel Mission or the Millionaires Club or one of the organizations locally that actually helps people lift up their lives again. Otherwise, you're just enabling them and increasing the scope and the problem and really causing pain to not only to the people that you're giving money to, but the surrounding community. Licton Springs moved only 13 people into housing between July of 2017 and March of 2018. And that village did better than others. 13 people. Now, one of the problems has been lack of case management, which the new budget that Seattle proposes claims that they're going to increase case management and handle some of that. I will not hold my breath for that, but we'll wait and see. Mayor Durkin said during her campaign she planned to open 1,000 tiny homes in her first year, a goal she won't come close to hitting. Instead, she's pushed to add 500 more spaces for people in shelters and tiny house villages, some of which will also include case management services. So, you know, again, first of all, this is a problem with most politicians, and it's a problem for us and the media. Anybody running a campaign now can just promise the moon and then not deliver and not do anything, and it's hardly ever looked up again. I promise I'm going to add 1,000, 1,000. And you know why she picked 1,000? Some consultant said, you know what, sounds better than a few hundred? 1,000. Say 1,000 homes, because it sounds like a lot. And they don't even come close to it, but there's no accountability. It's not like you're going to get fired for not doing it. So it just makes people feel good. They feel like they've done something, and the problem's gone away, and it really hasn't. In fact, it's become aggravated. So good for the city of Seattle finally drawing a line. Good for this Housing Institute for wanting to actually move people from these encampments to stable housing, and for not going along with this idea that these encampments should be a permanent thing. And by the way, also, the Soto homeless camp where the woman was bitten by dogs, that's being cleared out today. And I find that to be, to me, when you have dangerous dogs acting twice and endangering the lives of people, I would think that would have happened like overnight. You know, that would be like one of those things that's, hey, this has happened twice. They've got these dangerous dogs here, dangerous people. I don't want the day's delay. But anyway, at least it's been done. Remember the poor woman who Dory interviewed here, the business owner who was actually bit, and she testified before the city council. She said she wasn't going to be quiet anymore, Leslie Shelton, because she wanted them to, the city of Seattle, to actually do something. Now they're finally doing something. It just took her dog and herself being attacked and mauled, and then one other person yesterday being mauled, for the city to finally do something. There's got to be a trial attorney that's very grateful to the city of Seattle for delaying the cleanup of this particular encampment, because I have a feeling that there's a lawsuit there. It just smells like a payoff for the city eventually. And it sounds like the people deserve it, because the city's neglected their duty. And speaking of, did you see the mayor's budget increases financing for campers, parking people who camp in their cars and their RVs and abandoned RVs and other things in the city of Seattle? There's extra funding for that. And all I could think of was, when it comes to people who are hardworking and going into the city and law-abiding and they're paying for all of the other social services and they're trying to get into the commute, Seattle's cutting parking back and trying to discourage people and making life more difficult for them. But if you camp in your car in Seattle, then they're expanding the program and expanding some resources for you. So you can see who they value more, what they value more. It's absolute dedication to getting rid of cars and not so much to you if you're just commuting in and want to be able to make the commute. All right, story number three.
The Big Lead, Bizarro World.
A children's hospital in Colorado will no longer identify patients as male or female on the wristbands. The Aurora Hospital announced last week it removed gender identification from wristbands, labels, and prescriptions. Quote, "We want everyone who walks through our doors to feel comfortable and at home," the hospital said on Twitter and Facebook when people are leaving these messages for the hospital. The move dovetails with the hospital's work through its True Center for Gender Diversity that was created last year. The center works with transgender youth and their families, and a place they can, quote, receive medical help, such as puberty blocking or hormone treatments, as well as access to a psychologist and other resources. So the center has about 800 patients, according to the news report in Denver. It's not uncommon in our program to have families move from areas of Colorado that they perceive would be less welcoming and move into the Denver metro area where they feel there will be more support. Says Daniel Reardon, one of the physicians who's worked with transgender youths, gave rise to the center. The idea to remove gender labels from wristbands sprang from the work of a gender diversity task force. The hospital is seeing more and more patients who have diverse gender identities, and I think that's true of programs across the United States. So the weird thing that people are pointing out is, if a patient goes missing and you're trying to identify the patient quickly, and let's say they are born male or female, or born with male or female anatomy, Not identifying helps how? Not identifying that. You know, it's the kind of thing where if you need a specific code so you're not making certain people who are patients at that particular clinic uncomfortable, oh, I could get that. But if you're trying to identify people by physical characteristics, not sharing some pretty enormous physical characteristics, significant characteristics, is not really going to be all that helpful, right? I mean, that's not – you're not trying to pick on people that have gender dysphoria disorder. You're not trying to wound their feelings. What you're trying to do is be medically accurate and biologically accurate. And so the hospital says, well, the gender was no big deal, but it makes you wonder – you want to do the follow-up question. If that's not a big deal, then why was it there for so long? And what about the rest of the stuff? Why is that significant? And then if a patient goes missing and you don't have that information on there, you know, let's face it, there are some names where you're going to know, right? You can make you might get in trouble in some circles, but I figure if the name says Daisy, it's probably a girl. You know, and if the name says James, it's probably a guy, but not necessarily, because some women go by James or Jamie or something along those lines. So, you know, again, this is a misplaced effort at compassion, a desire to help people that are going through a trauma of their own, but you're going overboard and going to a point where you're not going to be able to identify people quickly. And in some cases, that can cause a safety issue. And I think that on balance, you should weigh those risks and ask yourself, you know, look, if there's an outside chance that somebody's life is going to be in trouble, we should probably keep to sticking to medically accurate identification rather than going for this other thing in order to provide for the feelings of some of our patients. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. As much as I'd like to talk about Brett Kavanaugh all day long, and I say that facetiously, it is time to start focusing on awesome audio.
This is Dory Monson's Awesome Audio Clips of the Week.
So in North Dakota, there's a lady who was decorating for Halloween. She put up her decorations a little bit early, kind of like department stores do right now. With various holidays, I saw a Christmas display recently
too
in the
early.
Store.
Too
Way
soon,
too early.
Too soon.
Way too soon. So she put up on her window, like in blood, she put a handprint, like a bloody handprint, and then it said, "Help me," with another blood smear
Again,
on it.
Again, too soon. Yeah. It's not October yet.
Well.
Too soon.
So here
I'm
it is.
I'm still in summer mode.
Keep in mind it's September. It's in North Dakota. And if you've never been to North Dakota, North Dakota is not a heavily populated state. There's not a lot of people there, right? So neighbors are pretty close. You know, people know each other. The neighbor across the street looks out, and the window that is almost always covered with drapes instead is open with a bloody smear and a handprint, and it says, "Help me," on it. So the whole thing ended up being our awesome audio number three.
Number three.
And that's because he dialed 911, and the WDAZ had the report on what happened.
I look across the street and I see in my neighbor's window this sign that says, "Help me." So I'm like, what's going on over here?
He says he saw what appeared to be an undercover squad car parked down the street before calling police.
So I go walk down there to look in the car, and a person in the car just motions me to get out of here. I'm like, whoa, okay, something's not right.
Thomas calls 911.
To my defense, there were no other Halloween decorations out there.
and what he means is no other decorations at her home. She hadn't put the rest of them up yet, so there's no pumpkins or anything like that. It's
they just had taken them out of storage, I believe, and they were getting ready. Why would that be the first thing you do? Is smear blood and say, "Help me," and think no one's going to think anything of it?
Let's start with what looks like my house has had a violent intrusion, and then we'll put out the spiders and the cobwebs and other things. Apparently, she had left the house. Their family had left the house.
They went to dinner.
Yeah, went to dinner. Just left the bloody.
And the neighbor had texted her, just didn't get a response.
Yeah. So. 15 minutes later, after he'd made the 911 call, and after he tried to wave down the police officer, that's when she called him back. And everybody's been making fun of him ever since. But I have to say, I'm on his side on this one.
Hey, it I looks like safe it, than sorry.
Right, totally. Can you imagine during Halloween if, you know, you put up a message and you really meant it, like your bloody hands up there, and you're like, somebody help me, and everyone's like, well, Nicole's got some great decorations for Halloween this year. So
if I don't see one of my neighbor's cars for a day or, like, you know, not home when it's supposed to be, then I'll text him saying, you know, dead in the ditch, ? Just to make sure.
Well, that's dark.
And what if they got back to you and said, actually, yeah, I kind of need some help.
If they didn't get back to me, then I would call 911.
Alive in the ditch,
yes,
that's what they would be.
I am dead in the ditch. You know, thank you for texting. Well, that is an unusual way to greet friends, Nicole. Glad you shared. That brings us to...
number two.
Tim Allen, the Last Man Standing star, is back in action. I hadn't pointed yet. I was.
I know you didn't. Sean jumped the gun.
Sorry, I had an itchy trigger finger on that.
That's right. He's just excited. He's like, Bose is almost out of here. Dory's almost back. Let's move it along. Get it out of here. So, Last Man Standing star Tim Allen says it's nobody's business what he thinks about politics. Everybody can just take a break.
I don't want to be PC. I don't have it. And for all of us in the stand-up world, all of us are seeing this and feeling this, and it's a little dangerous and uncomfortable that there is things you can't say because they might hurt people's feelings. And my mother told me a long time ago, and it was from a Baptist church, I think somewhere in the South, a preacher said to his flock, and my mom repeated, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never break them. And my mom said that I've been to school, was bullied. She goes, names, words mean nothing. It's the intent behind the word. Lenny Bruce said it. Comics play with it all the time. We joke around about words. Words don't mean anything. And all of a sudden now into the world says words matter. And in my gut, words don't matter. The intent behind the word matters. I'm a wordsmith. We play with words all the time. But it's the intent and what people do with their lives. But words, man, we get into a weird thing when I can't say stuff. Because you don't like what that means. Well, that meaning it, I didn't mean that by that.
I said, here, I think Alan's off a little bit. I agree with him that there's way too much focus on everybody freaking out about, I'm offended by this comedian. They should never have a job again. I want to make sure that I'm going to follow him around with a hashtag, and I'm going to get my Twitter friends, and we're going to anonymously create a hysteria on Twitter and make sure somebody doesn't have a job anymore because we disagree politically or whatever. I think that's just bogus and crap. But it's not that words don't matter. Words do matter. People have penned great things, and those words have inspired people to all kinds of actions. Words can do things. They can make people feel it a certain way. But I do agree with his intent. You know, there's a big difference with if you're going to a comedian who is going to make fun of everybody, and then you say, oh, my gosh, I'm offended because he made fun of people like me. You need to just kind of take a step back and say, that's on me because I showed up, right? It's not like, you know, if he was making fun of my weight, for example, and I was at a comedian's place and they were making jokes about that, you kind of need to just own it and say, that's comedy, and let it go. Just stop with the whole I'm a victim all
the
time. Yeah. I don't know. I wasn't sure if you agreed or not. You were looking at me like...
I love Tim Allen, and I love The Last Man Standing, and I've told both you and Dory to watch it for years.
I still haven't, I admit.
And I think we'll have an announcement next week, but I believe Dory just started watching it.
Whoa.
I'm very excited.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you know, what's he have, the flu? Because if I have the flu, I will start watching that.
He texted me that he was waiting for his wife to get ready and had just gotten through three episodes, and he loves it.
See,
so
I would.
Very excited to hear
it. It's not that I'm opposed. I like Tim Allen's stuff. I think he's a very funny guy. I enjoy it. It's just that I don't like lots of laugh track. And when I watched the first episode, I heard a lot of laugh track.
Oh, get over it.
It's a lot
worth
of laugh track. All right. I will try it again. I will try it again.
Do it. Love it.
All right. So that brings us to a story about a poor little fella who needed some help with
Sean's laugh track.
Yeah. Awesome.
Thanks, Sean.
If it's my laugh track, it's okay. You know, a lot of cheering and adoration because I wish I had my own. I could just play it and self-validate myself. Exactly. That brings us to our last story of awesome audio, which is a nice little kid was seeking some help because he had some really tough homework. So he did what most little kids do in that kind of situation. He just pulled up and called 911, which brings us to awesome audio number one.
Number one.
911, what's the address of your emergency?
Hi, yeah, this is an emergency, but I'm 10 years old and I'm working on my math homework right now, I can't figure out what 71 divided by 3,052 is.
How much?
What? 71 divided by
3,052.
3,052? Yeah.
I could try to help you. I don't know how to do that off the top of my head either at the moment, so.
Get an abacus, sir.
1 second. Are you working on decimals or?
I'm working on division.
Okay. So are you sure it's 71 divided by that, or is it 3,052 divided by 71?
It's 3,052 divided by 71.
Okay. 1 second.
Well, in the emergency.
Just doing it on a calculator, it's 42.98, which you would round up to like 43.
Don't just give her the answer.
Oh, okay.
It's a he, right?
Thank you.
Is that all you needed?
Yeah.
All right, I'll let you go.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
So somebody suspend this 911 operator because he just let this kid cheat, right? I mean, at the very least, he could have said, all right, you have a computer at home? Let's click and find the calculator and let's do this.
Pretty hilarious.
Yeah, it is. I love the little kid's voice, too.
I just hope nobody was calling 911 getting a busy signal.
with a bloody handprint on their window saying, help me. You know? All right. David Bowes in for Dory Monson on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. And this is the last part of the week where I will be hosting. Dory is returning on Monday to take the lead again on the big show, which is why actually to host the big show. The lead is already here and has stayed here throughout the week. That's you, Nicole, just in case you didn't know.
Thanks.
The boss. Yeah. So Nicole has remained constant, and then Dory's going to come back so she can boss him around on Monday. So that'll be fun for them. But since it is the end of the day and the end of the week, especially, it means it's time for
today's sign that the end is near.
The first sign today comes out of Altoona, Pennsylvania, where school officials ended up scrambling to respond to a reported threat of a school shooting. Serious stuff. Scary stuff. Altoona area high school administrators decided to investigate, launch an investigate, including interviews with students and parents, because they had learned that there was a prediction of the school shooting. The interviews revealed that the prediction and the warning came from a Ouija board. The students were playing with a Ouija board, and the Ouija board predicted death and doom at
and
the school.
And that was... cause for panic.
That's cause for panic. That's cause for multiple interviews. That would be the point at which I would stop the investigation and haul whoever, you know, decided to inform us and say, look, I want to know who was holding that little triangle while this was being spelled out, because we all know who spelled it out. It was the person who was holding the triangle at the end. It wasn't the spirits from beyond.
I won't even touch a Ouija board. I just don't know. Sean, you probably have, right?
Have what?
Have you played with a Ouija board?
Oh, I own one. Yeah, and I have had some terrific results over the years. I believe in the Ouija board. I really do.
I did have a loved one who swore that she got a warning from beyond. I won't share the full story because I don't think I'd do it justice. But as you know, Sean, I do have my own story of possession, but I don't like to tell it outside of October.
No, it's a fantastic story.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. So, but we don't tell that in September. It's too early, too soon.
Too soon. We just talked about that.
But for the school,
everything you're doing is bad. I want you to know this.
What?
Sorry. I hit a wrong button. Sorry.
That was an electronic Ouija. Just telling us something from beyond. All right. So the school, Altoona Area High School, safe and sound, at least in the real world, or at least the physical world, spiritual world, they're struggling.
But you know what? They took a threat seriously.
Good for them. Better safe than sorry. Although whoever thought that the Ouija board was a serious thing, kind of sorry. That's just kind of sad. The second sign that the end is near. A high school has put athletic director at Soddy Daisy High School in Tennessee on leave. Jared Hazley is placed on leave because he was on a video about the student dress code. And he was trying to be funny on that video. And as Tim Allen shared with us earlier, it's a dangerous time to be funny. And if you're not already a stand-up comic, but you're just the athletic director at Soddy Daisy High School in Tennessee, don't try to be funny. Someone could be offended. In this case, he said that women said, if you want to blame someone for the dress code, blame the girls. They pretty much ruin everything. They ruin the dress code. They ruin, well, look at Adam and look at Eve. That's all, really all you got to get to, okay? You can really go back to the beginning of time. So it'll be like that the rest of your life. Get used to it. Keep your mouth shut. Suck it up and follow the rules, he says. And the keep the mouth shut seems to be directed to boys. They are going to have to follow the directives of others. Now, you look at this guy's face and you look what he's doing and you say, is anything serious coming out of his mouth? Is this so wild and crazy? Is there a sitcom that's left on regular television where the dad's not a doofus and the mom isn't the super smart person that's fixing everything, or a commercial for laundry detergent or anything else where moms are the ones that are fixing everything and doing everything right? So if that's okay, why is it a suspendable offense for this poor athletic director to try and make a joke and bomb with it? You know, and then the school reaches this whole, we find the comments about this to be shocking and inexcusable. Is it really inexcusable? Hitler's inexcusable. This guy is just a guy with a bad joke, okay? So let's reserve inexcusable for actual inexcusable things and save the, well, that could have gone better, and not overplay it if we could. That would be nice. And then the third sign that the end is near comes from a Louisiana middle school that is being blasted for gross and inappropriate Spirit Week themes. MJ Moten on Twitter was outraged because their daughter had dress-up week at school, and the gross and inappropriate theme was the red light, or the stoplight, rather. Red light might get a little racy. The stoplight theme for Spirit Week. What does that mean? I didn't know. It means wear red if you are taken, as in you have a boyfriend or girlfriend. Wear green if you're single. Wear yellow if it's complicated. She's in middle school. Moten says, totally inappropriate. Welcome to Louisiana. I just looked at that and I thought, in middle school, we did have the kind of taken, not taken. We had a song for that. Song for taken and not taken. Yes, George Strait. Check yes or no.
That's pretty much what this is. Come on.
Totally. It's like, except they're acknowledging it with red and yellow. They can just wear red, yellow. That's offensive. Green. I would just go crazy as his teacher right now. I mean, it's just nonsense. Let it go. Sign the end is near. And the end is upon us here on the Dory Monson Show, 97.3 Cairo FM. Ron and Donner next.
I will not have this in my studio.
You have failed conclusively. It's over. And there is nothing that you can do here in this room that can turn that around. Nothing you can do that can make up for what you just did.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.